Radio. This is In Focus, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Today, archaeologist Ben Huxbergen tells the story of a Native American prehistoric canoe that was found in the Tennessee River back in the 1940s. Ben published his dugout canoe story in the Alabama Archaeological Society newsletter, and he shares it today as part of the History in Your Hands series. Ben joins us by Skype from his North Alabama farm. Ben Huxbergen, thank you so much for joining us from North Alabama, where you're a canoeist, a kayaker, and a professional archaeologist.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are a cultural resource manager and installation archaeologist for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal. But one thing you wrote about was a mystery, and it has to do with a dugout canoe.
That's correct. Yeah, the story starts all the way back in 1948 when a mussler, someone who professionally hunted freshwater mussels to sell the shells, was dredging lines across the Tennessee River below the little town of Triana and kept having a log foul his lines. So he snagged the log and drug it up on the bank, and it turned out not to be a log at all, but it was a prehistoric Native American dugout canoe.
You're an expert on stone tools and geoarchaeology and prehistoric warfare. So what was your assessment of the time period of this thing?
That's difficult to say. You know, there's very few of these sorts of artifacts found this far inland. Wood is generally not preserved in the archaeological record. So based on similar artifacts that have been found elsewhere, we can assume that these dugout canoes were used throughout prehistory and as recently as the historic period. But we don't have a lot to compare it to, so we're really not sure how old this artifact was.
Now, you have seen pictures of it. Can you describe it from those photos?
I can, and actually the amateur archaeologist that ended up with the canoe originally described it based on his measurements, and he said it was, I believe, around 15 feet long. He believed it was made out of a poplar log, probably a tulip poplar, a yellow poplar, which a lot of these dugout canoes, that was a pretty common tree to use for those, from what we know. It was hollowed out on one side, probably using stone tools. One end was pointed, it had a rounded stern, and the bow was tapered to a point about 16 inches long. So it was probably used by no more than one or two people at a time. Fairly small boat.
Fill us in on the entire story.
So the mussler didn't realize what he'd found. It was just a nuisance to him. So he just parked it on the shore and let it be. A couple people who staff with the Fish and Wildlife Service from Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge came up on it on the riverbank, and they realized what it was after they rolled it over. They loaded it up in a truck and brought it to a storage shed on the refuge. The canoe just kind of languished there for several years until one of those staff members attended a lecture by the amateur archaeologist in Decatur and mentioned what they'd found, and he was very excited. This archaeologist was Ed Mahan, and he was very active in the 1950s and 1960s in North Alabama. His main interest was Paleo-Indian period, so he'd look for rock shelters and excavate those where he thought they might have Paleo-Indian artifacts. So this canoe was kind of out of his wheelhouse as well, so to speak. So they just turned it over to him because they didn't know what to do with it. They needed the storage space for other things. And he loaded up the canoe and took it to a friend of his named Jake Gurley. Folks in North Alabama know Jake Gurley is the man who first opened Cathedral Caverns to the public. Cathedral Caverns is now a state park. It's owned by the state of Alabama. And Jake Gurley put this canoe on display in front of the cavern entrance.
And then what happened?
Well, there the canoe sat. Jay Gurley had told Ed Mahan that he would have it impregnated with resin or something to preserve it, but Jay Gurley fell on financial difficulties in the late 1970s and had to sell Cathedral Caverns. He sold it to another buyer, another private buyer, and they kept the canoe on display there until the state finally acquired the caverns, and then the state kept it on display there. But the problem was that this was a wooden artifact, and having it on display on sawhorses in the open air out in front of the cave this poor canoe started deteriorating pretty quickly. And since I wrote the article, I found out that that was the ultimate fate of the canoe. It sat out in the rain and snow and weather and heat for several years. And every time they moved it to mow under it, another piece would fall off. And by around the early 2000s, all that was left was about a 2-foot chunk that they eventually discarded. It's a sad story for this canoe. It was an important artifact, and unfortunately, it's been lost to science now.
In the article that you wrote, it's entitled Lost. You say toward the end of the article, this is one of the only Aboriginal watercraft ever retrieved from the waters of the Tennessee River and may be only the second known canoe of its type from the entire state of Alabama. So you're saying that even the remnants of this thing are lost to time. You haven't gotten any answers since you wrote the article?
The only answer I got was from the former park naturalist at Gunnersville State Park, who worked at Cathedral Caverns back in the 1990s or so, and before that, when a lot of the archaeological excavations were going on there. She said she remembered seeing it there and remembered around 2003 when she retired, when it had almost completely disintegrated to nothing. That's as best as I can tell what happened to it and what its fate was.
Can you describe the Native Americans who paddled it?
We don't know for sure. The other canoes that have been found in the interior waters have usually been fairly recent. The only other one I know of from the Tennessee River was actually found floating in the river in 1797. So that's at the McClung Museum in Knoxville. So that was probably a historic one, likely a Cherokee canoe. Others that have been found date to the Mississippian period, so fairly late in prehistory. People that used those were farmers. They'd grow corn and beans and squash. They lived in villages, small towns, and they probably would be using the rivers as transportation corridors or sources of fish and mussels and things like that.
You yourself are a canoeist and kayaker and a professional archaeologist. Do you ever feel a kinship with them when you get on the water?
Oh, absolutely. I'm an avid outdoorsman. I love foraging and hunting for wild foods, and there's a lot I can learn from these past people about how they lived, how they related to nature, how they'd used the waterways for transportation and for subsistence and entertainment.
About how heavy would a poplar wood canoe be of, say, 15 to 20 feet in length?
I had an opportunity when I was in high school to paddle one of these dugout canoes. It was very similar construction, but a different continent. This was in West Africa. So I have a little inkling on the difficulties that these folks ran into navigating these things, especially on powerful rivers like the Tennessee River. So I've moved logs of that size, and they are not light. These were heavy, heavy watercraft, probably not easily moved by a single person.
Well, Ben, I want to thank you for sharing this story, a tale of lost and found and lost again. And I hope that you and I can talk again about what you've learned about Native Americans and how we might apply it to today.
Thank you so much. I would like that.
Joining us by Skype was archaeologist Ben Hochsbergen for our History in Your Hands series with the Alabama Archaeological Society. You may have seen this Aboriginal dugout canoe years ago if you ever visited Cathedral Caverns. But the canoe has been lost to time and, according to Ben, is a cautionary tale about the mishandling of important artifacts. Thanks for joining us today for In Focus, which is now a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Carolyn Hutchison, and this is listener-supported Troy Public Radio.